the Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
L. Neal, three votes, and I declare the winner of the 2020 Brownlow Medal, Lachie Neal of the Brisbane Lions Football Club.
Well done, Gil. Well done, Gil. Would have been nice to see Jimmy Bartel, the Triple Premiership player, Norm Smith medalist, and, of course, Brownlow medalist, who welcomed another one into the fold last night with Lachie Neal's victory for the Brisbane Lions. Would have been nice to see him up there present and put the medal around Lachie Neal's neck rather than the mannequin where he had to do it himself, which was an unusual setting, I must admit. Jimmy, good morning to you.
Morning, gentlemen. The previous year's Brownlow medalist normally has to present the Brownlow medal, so they couldn't stick with that tradition. So, it was the self-congratulations award of the year.
Surely, as was picked out by many and sundry watching last night, surely Simon Black could have done it. Jason Ekamanis is up there. You could have found someone.
Michael Voss.
He might be in Adelaide, so it might be a little bit difficult. But
yeah, true.
Blackie and Acker up there.
Yeah, his coach. I don't mind that, Rammer. Even his skipper, Dane Zorko, someone like that could have been nice to say.
His girlfriend could have done.
He's not overly tall, so he doesn't have to bend down too far to get the medal on his neck. So, unbelievable season. I think a very popular winner. Look, you try to make a case for Travis Boak and the others, and I think it all finished about where we expected, didn't we? Lachie Neal was dominant. He's dominant through the first part of the year, but 31 votes in a 17-game season. Boy, oh boy, wowee.
What was your vote teller, Jim?
29, I think I got.
29? That's a lot of votes, too. No wonder you won. 29 is a good effort.
I think your dog disagrees. Maybe it was only 28.
Yeah. Oh, was it 28?
No, I don't know.
I don't know. It was about 28, 29, but just for half playing at home, a couple of games up my sleeve, didn't then play the last two games. But
give us a spell. It was 29 votes, by the way, James. 29.
Yeah, didn't play the last two, yeah.
Freshen up for the finals, freshen up.
I think one of the things that I'd like to just mention briefly is just how good it was the recruitment of Lachie Neal to come across from Fremantle. Now, I know that there was obviously a bit of a strain on the relationship for the Dockers that he was prepared to leave, but you've still got to get the deal done, and you've still got to be the club that the player wants to go to. And when you look at the trade, it was Lachie Neal and pick 30 for picks 6, 19 and 55. So that was the exchange.
What was the exchange?
Lachie Neal and pick 30 going to Brisbane, and Fremantle 6, 19 and 55. Now, I think in the end, I'm not even sure whether they ended up staying that way. I don't think they did, but that was essentially the exchange. So Fremantle and Brisbane didn't have to overpay to get him. And the interesting thing about that was that essentially what they said was, and this is where I think it was really brave from Brisbane, is that they let a captain go in Dane Beams, and they sort of went, well, you know what? We're going to make the deal happen here where Neal will come in for Beams, who was very good for Brisbane at the time and was the captain, but they made a bold call. So I think, you know, it's not just because he won the Brownlow. He's been an excellent player for 2 years, but, geez, he's made an impact.
Yeah, and I think also the impact Whitey too has helped them with future recruits as well. That a very, very good player at the time, like an emerging star at the time when he was at Freo. Like, he was a very good player, but he wasn't the star that he is now at Brisbane. But an emerging player picks Brisbane, and I remember being around that time that it wasn't anything to do with money or length of contract. It was actually he wanted to come to Brisbane, like not only. Yep. The Lions, but the city of Brisbane and that lifestyle that brings. And we're seeing more and more players who don't want to be part of the footy bubble. Like, they don't want to be day-to-day consumed by it. They don't want to be, you know, every time you flick on the car radio or pick up the newspaper, it's front and back AFL football. You know, it's, I know, speaking with Hodgie in the past, that was the best thing he loved about being up at Brisbane. It was like, it's almost on the weekend you can get your footballer on, and Monday to Friday you just oh, well, I'm having a barbecue in 20 degree weather in the middle of winter and in the backyard, and I can listen to everything else apart from football.
And Jimmy, I think it's a really good point, and I think where you got to add to it as well is how good their medical team is, and maybe it's just the weather, I don't know, but Lincoln McCarthy, who was part of the reason why Lockie went up to Brisbane, because they could reunite the two of them as close friends. I mean, Lincoln couldn't get on the park at Geelong, and he's only missed a game since he's been at Brisbane, and even Grant Birchall, who missed so much footy in the last few years, goes to Brisbane, now I know he did his hamstring in the last game, but he's played a hell of a lot more football than I think a lot of people would have anticipated.
Yeah, they built a really good plan around Link McCarthy, and it was about playing football. It wasn't, again, contract. Look, the contract was friendly for both. Like, if Lincoln played more football, he got rewarded for playing more football, and for the Lions, it protected them as well. But it was a clear plan. It was, you come up here, clearly, yeah, your mate's committed in Lockie Neal. We're a young list. This is where you play, but most importantly, this is how you'll train. And this is how we'll try and get your body shape right, you know, to take a bit of stress off. Because you had a lot of stress-related foot and lower leg injuries. So this is how we'll get you back playing football. And also, it came at the right time. It wasn't like the fact that Geelong hadn't tried enough to help Link McCarthy, but it probably came at the right time. A fresh set of eyes, a fresh program, and a place to start.
And they did a hell of a job. That pick six, Whitey, involved in the Lockie Neal trade, is a storied pick in AFL football, because they gave pick six for Neil, don't worry about 16 and 58 or whatever it was, 55. So they gave six to Fremantle for Neil. Fremantle then passed that pick on to Melbourne to get Jesse Hogan. Melbourne then gave it to the Suns so that the D's could snatch Stephen May away from Gold Coast. And Gold Coast drafted Ben King with it. That's a pretty good story of a pick six. In the draft. So Lockie Neal for Ben King, effectively, sort of, in the end up. It's not bad.
Not quite.
It's close enough.
Do we know who the steak knives was? Do we know who the steak knives was at pick 30? There's always a steak knives.
Well, Brisbane didn't keep it. I don't know who it was in the end, but I was looking at it last night, but they definitely didn't keep it.
We'll check it. We'll check it out and see where that pick 30 went. Joe would be all over that back at RSN HQ. Jim, we got the right result last night. Did we get the right result across the weekend with Richmond and Geelong being our grand finals? We'll go through the games in a bit of detail shortly, but did we get the right outcome for footy in this COVID-affected season?
Look, any of the four teams would have been the right result because of the way they played the season, but it probably gives the AFL a tick for its bubble life, because it could have been a quite big possibility that the two teams playing in the grand final would have stayed in their beds for most of the year and being in Brisbane and Port Adelaide. But the two teams who lived the bubble life in the last four have made the grand final, you know, Geelong and Richmond, you know, 100-odd days in the bubble, all that sort of stuff, hub life, whatever it's being coined. So I think it shows that it can work. But what it probably points to, and we touch on this nearly every week, and why I was so big about Richmond, Geelong, and those older, experienced sides, they're just better equipped to handle it. It's, you know, the ups and downs. There's obviously going to be different things pop up. We know with Richmond, Kebab Gate, Brooke Cochin Gate, all that sort of stuff. But they're experienced and well-organised on the field and when it comes to just the pure football.
And Geelong are the same. Jim.
And which gate?
Ghoulie Gate.
The Ghoulie Gate. Sorry, I forgot that one.
Don't forget the Ghoulie Gate.
But when you see these two sides play, they're always well drilled and well organised. It's if one goes out, they just plug another player in, and they know how to play the system and the role. We clearly know how Richmond play their football, and we clearly know how Geelong play the football. And Half, I think you've coined it really well. Maxwell Smart game. Grand final, chaos versus control.
Well, that's what me. Damien Hardwick mentioned that through the year when they played each other, so I can't claim any credit, but I think it's a fantastic way of looking at the game if you're just looking at styles of play. Richmond are chaos, Geelong are control. It's magnificent. You've got Maxwell Smart, Agent 86, and the Cone of Silence somewhere. It's fantastic.
and I think there's no doubt that's the case going into the grand final, but it was interesting, guys, and I'd love your insights into this, that it was what Richmond and Geelong both did behind the ball that, under enormous pressure when the game was there to be won, neither Brisbane or Port Adelaide could penetrate the defences of the opposition. And we saw, you know, Port Adelaide pushing really late in that game against Richmond. Richmond had the answers. And then when Brisbane had to really sort of take off the handbrake and go for it when they got behind, they just couldn't score against Geelong. It was a real feature of both the Cats and the Tigers winning.
Yeah, before like Rammer jumps in there, both of them do what they do really well, and I've heard Rammer speak about this. It's a defensive group. It's until you show them something, they're not going to adjust the way they defend. Now, Geelong aren't going to start defending the lead until you start actually hitting the lead. So when Brisbane, you know, are coming quick and they're bombing away and things like that, they'll just keep their back set. They'll take back shoulder. They'll roll over and help out. They'll get the outnumber. The wings always come back and help out, so they've almost, it seems like they've got seven defenders, and then they spread really well. So once they turn the footy over, watch Geelong and Richmond, how quickly then they set up attack or set up their exit. Like I saw one for Richmond, even in the wet, there was a free kick against Laddams, who gave away about 25 free kicks inside forward 50. But this, if you're looking for it, you'll notice, you just watch Edwards and the rest of the, who's near the ball, just go. They knew exactly where they need to go. They got width on the ground and they got length. So it sounds like it's not much. But what it does is, for Port Adelaide and for Brisbane, you have to quickly make a choice on the run while you're fatigued. Am I going out and, you know, trying to follow them, which opens up the middle of the ground, which both Geelong and Richmond like? Or am I trying to crowd the middle, which then those sides are just happy to take those easy ones wide and exit? So it's their ability to set up defence, Whitey, but then it's almost like a click of fingers. They transition from one to another. We all defend, we all attack. We all defend, we all attack. And we all change our position of where the ball is as well.
So the interesting part on Friday night with the Richmond-Port Adelaide game, Nankervis was enormous in that last quarter, obviously, where he was, you know, he dropped into defence and was taking marks or getting the ball to boundary side for a stoppage. But the problem with that is Lysett couldn't float down because Port Adelaide were trying not to concede as well. So the ball would come back out and then Lysett would be in that contest. The issue that I found for Port Adelaide is because they went to the Dixon so often in that last quarter, they simply didn't have another strategy. When the ball, if Nankervis hit a market and the ball hit the ground, it was those yellow Richmond jumpers that we saw at ground level either taking the ball out of defence or taking the ball towards the boundary line. So Port Adelaide didn't adjust in those probably last 5 minutes. Now, in a prelim final, you say, well, you know, it's chaotic. You just want to get the ball in. But Port just needed that little bit more composure, I thought, in that last quarter. Because they were doing all the, particularly late, Richmond early in that quarter did their work to get the lead. And then late in that quarter, Port Adelaide were doing all their work, but they just didn't have the composure going inside forward 50 to find another target. Now, that's when Marshall, I thought, needed to come into his own. He's the one that needed to work another angle rather than just going to that same contest and the ball just getting marked or ball getting spoiled. Then Richmond just continued to kick up and down the line. So that was perfect. Tom Lynch then drops back into defence. He takes a couple of marks. Vlosten was doing what he did because the opponent that Vlosten had simply wasn't dangerous enough. Port didn't. They just kicked the same angle inside forward 50 late.
So is that Port Adelaide not being experienced enough or not being mature enough to be able to not just go to Dixon all the time, or how much of the credit needs to go to Richmond that force you into doing those things because of how well they're set up behind the ball?
Yeah, an enormous amount needs to go to Richmond because, and Jim touched on that, like the way both Richmond and Geelong set up their defences are perfect. We've discussed this all year. The way to beat Richmond and Geelong is to separate their defenders. Soon as all their defenders defend together, you can't score against them. It's almost impossible to score against because they're just so good at coming off their direct opponent, coming third, fourth man into the contest and spoiling. So I think it is probably a little bit of a maturity thing for Port Adelaide. How do they isolate other players in Dixon? Now, any footballer wants to be the man in those big moments, critical moments. But I think from Charlie's point of view, he had to realise he almost had to be a decoy in those last moments, suck the players with him to then go to a one-on-one. Try get a Rosie in a one-on-one contest. Try get a Robbie Gray in a one-on-one contest to give yourself a chance to score. I didn't feel in those last couple of minutes Port Adelaide were going to score because they just kept doing the same thing.
The defender to roll off and have the extra defender then. Didn't equalise. Now, we were talking to Lee Matthews. Sorry to drop a name, but talking to Lee Matthews across the weekend, he goes,
it's
the problem
with... one you could drop, to be honest.
he does have a statue.
It's a twofold effect when you drop that player back into your defensive half of the ground like Richmond did. You're almost confining your defenders to being in the action for that entire period once you've done that late in the game, because every time you bail it out, it's going to come back in because the opposition's got the extra number. But if you don't match it up, it's going to be more difficult to score for the team that needs to hit the scoreboard, which, of course, is Port Adelaide in those dying moments. I was really surprised that they allowed that to happen. You might as well lose by 4 goals in the end. It's a preliminary final. No one cares what the outcome is. You might as well lose by 4 goals and try and hit the scoreboard, maybe even try and get a spare forward, like chuck 2 forward and see what Richmond do on the back of that. Because I just was surprised that they didn't match it up.
So, Jim, just in that last quarter, I spoke about Richmond doing their work early. So, last quarter alone, here's the key statistics. Disposals, Richmond +9. Contested football +8. Ground ball difference in a wet night +8. Clearance difference in the last quarter +12. And then time in forward half, they're at 55%. So, they played a smart game, Richmond. Early in that last quarter, let's do the work. Do the work, push as hard as we can, then we're going to trust our defence late.
Yeah, and it's no coincidence they're both in the grand final, but when you watch these two sides and they get the spare or the extra number rolling back, I love watching how both of these teams actually allow the spare to be the spare. And it sounds really simple how I've explained that, but I've seen sides who do this poorly throughout the year, and it's always a bugbear, is... other defenders at younger, inexperienced sides, when they drop the spare back, they take it as a reason, just a license to drop further off their man. It's actually, when you have a spare defender, all your defensive group needs to be tighter on their man, so the spare is actually emphasised and can come over and help you out. It frustrates the hell out of me when you watch young sides do it and they all start throwing the leg rope out an extra 10 metres. What ends up happening is, everyone starts rolling up and you actually lose your spare advantage. Your spare ends up being so deep and having no impact on the game. So if everyone's tighter on their direct opponent, the spare can just watch the game. And this is what Richmond used to do with Alex Rance. They do it now with Nick Vlosten and things like that. Their spare is clearly defined and everyone knows their role. So when the ball comes in long and deep, the spare's not looking around going, well, there's one shooting up on the lead, or, you know, like say if it's Richmond and it's Vlosten, he's not going... oh, Dave Asprey's left his opponent get a little bit of a head start. He's going to have a free jump at the ball. So what you've got to do is you play really tight. Then where the spare helps out is if something breaks down, they can come over and help out, and then the next one's really clear. But if they come man up the spare, well, then he puts his arm across, and then the next one becomes really clear.
And that became really clear on Saturday night with Tom Stewart. Mm. So... yep. Alice Yeoman comes in to play that role of trying to negate Stewart. It didn't work. It just didn't work. It was, I'm not sure why you bring a player in like Alice Yeoman. You bring him in to play inside mid around the contest, not to play on Tom Stewart. But in quarters 2 and 3, when basically that tag on Stewart dropped away, Stewart had 15 possessions in those two quarters. And just control the back line. He just shifted the chess pieces where he wanted you. We saw a number of times on the coverage they had to down the ground. And what Jim's talking about there, Stewart was just alone. He had, you know, he had sort of 10 or 15 metres around him where he could dictate where he wanted to stand.
No, he was too good. We will get more in depth on that one, Rama, after the break, the Geelong and Brisbane game. Just on, I think, one of the acknowledgements we need to make, well, certainly in my perspective anyway, from the game Friday night with the Tigers and the Par, is the performance of the Richmond midfield in the second half. And more than likely, the midfield coach, Adam Kingsley, who was able to identify at halftime a way to counteract the success of the Power at stoppages and clearances through that first half. And the first half was 21-12 in favour of Port around the stoppages. Now, the scores were even at half-time. Remember that, 3-3 apiece at half-time. So they're still not letting it affect them from a game sense perspective, but they were 21-12 down, Richmond, at half-time. They identified something at half, and I don't know what it was. I can't tell you that, but they identified something in a way to defeat Port Adelaide in the second half. And in the second half, the numbers were 29-8. 29-8. So plus 21 after being minus 9 at halftime in the second half. That is a story that needs to be told, because that's a not only the result of a midfield group that's got great trust in each other and their coach, but a coaching staff that's able to identify a problem and rectify it mid-game, Jim, and not wait till the end of the day and summarise it for the next game if they win, or for the next game if they lose in a home and away season. They identified it in one of the biggest games of the season, fixed it, and got their players to execute. I think that's a fantastic effort by whoever came up with the solution.
Yeah, and I think that just points to what a great side, you have to call them. They have been a great side for the last 3 to 4 years, Richmond is, and I heard the stat on the TV the other night. Since their premiership year, they haven't been beaten by the same side twice in a year. So that just points to their forward scouting, their learning, and their, as you said, identifying not only what they do well against the opposition, but what the opposition is trying to do to them. And they fix it. And they fix it within games. And they fix it also during a season. So well, Whitey.
Well, we spoke to Camden McIntosh during the week, and he said exactly that. We don't get beaten by the same team twice in a row. He actually referenced that. So clearly, it had been one of the themes during the week. I'm interested in your thoughts on the conditions. As soon as it was wet, how much does that help Richmond, and how much did it take away potentially Port Adelaide's ability with speed through the midfield, which kind of got Richmond in trouble earlier in the year? Now, I know Richmond was a lot stronger personnel-wise in the prelim, but do you think it made a big difference in the match?
I thought it was enormous.
Yeah.
I thought it was enormous because it made Port Adelaide turn into a kick-mark team, which we spoke about on Friday. Whitey, I didn't see Port Adelaide play on much. Through the middle of the ground on Friday night. So Richmond loved it. They just pushed up on the mark all night, made Port Adelaide go back off the mark, kick up and down the line a number of times. The times when Port Adelaide did move the ball, they looked enormously dangerous. And Richmond were, that's when they did struggle slightly. But again, you can overanalyze a game, and this will be Port Adelaide sitting there going, geez, how much do we need to work on here? They lost the game by 6 points.
Mm. Yeah.
6 points. So you've got to go, we've got to improve, absolutely. But I think the point that half makes is probably the most critical for Port Adelaide. What happened to our clearance work in the second half? Yep, Richmond dominated half. They changed their style. But what happened to Port Adelaide in that second half? Why did they fail around that contest so miserably in the second half, and particularly in that last quarter?
Yeah, and they probably have to take a little few days off. You let the emotion go out of it, and this is why I always talk about it with you, Half, is someone who's not emotionally attached day-to-day with Port Adelaide but is a good football brain, sit there and watch it with him, because then what you take out of it, Whitey, is was it the system or the individuals? Now, sometimes you can go, well, if we had our time again, we'd probably set up exactly the same. We got beaten just by talent, individual, grunt, work, whatever it may be. I'm not saying effort, because the effort was there, but sometimes the opposition just does it better than you. And then if you walk away from it going, okay, well, if this player and this player just was a little bit better in that contest and a little bit better in that contest, it could have been different. Or you go, well, no, they completely brought the wing in, or their half forwards come up and had a bigger impact. Well, then that... Yeah, is it the X's and O's, or is it the individuals?
Did we have an issue with the deliberate out of bounds?
Yeah, we did.
You did?
Yeah, we did, because it was... Well, we did because it wasn't consistent with what we saw the next night or what we've seen at times during the course of the year.
And I think that's the issue. That's the issue, I reckon, Ramo. I think to the spirit of what that law is, I didn't mind it, I must admit. But to what we have been paying through the season than what we saw the next night, which was totally different. That's the problem.
I think on a wet night, and look, Jim's probably the best wet weather player that we've seen in a long time. You do kick the ball to the boundary a lot. You do kick the ball to the boundary a lot, and the ball skids on. Okay, so in a dry night, the ball doesn't skid, so it probably stays in play a little bit more. But as soon as the ball skids on and goes to the boundary, the umpire has to call. I think the biggest one was obviously the Hamish Hartlett one. You know, Lambert kicks that goal, and you know, Richmond obviously are then away in that last quarter. But see, I'm probably a little bit different. I don't think I had too much of an issue with it personally.
Yeah, but there's two arguments to this. It's whether you had an issue with it versus do we see the same interpretation week in, week out? So there's two different arguments.
Yeah, and I think we get trapped between the two different interpretations for the rule. The old traditional deliberate out of bounds, like deliberately did he put it out of bounds, compared to what they've tried to change it in the last 2 years is, have you done your best to keep the ball in play?
Insufficient
intent. But Jimmy, this is exactly right, and this is where there's a responsibility on the commentators and the media to make sure that it's educated properly, because people still see it as deliberate out of bounds. That's not what the rule is. So there is a difference in the way that rule is interpreted now compared to what it was two or three, four years ago. But it still needs to be interpreted the same way game to game.
But it's never going to be educated because it gets people frustrated. It's like the MRP sort of stuff. Why would you educate people properly on the MRP? Because it gets people hot under the collar and becomes a talking point.
Interesting. 24-8. We'll get to a break. Sorry, Jim. Keep going.
No, because it's like that one with the MRP or the deliberate. You get people jumping up and down and, you know, the hot takes and commentary around it. He needs 4 weeks for that. And then you look at the MRP thing and you go, you can't get 4 weeks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's responsible conversation. That's what needs to happen. We'll get to a break. We'll talk about the Cats and the Lions after this because they deserve some coverage, and the Cats certainly do. They've had a good finals campaign. They've been a clinical team throughout these last couple of weeks, and they get a chance to do it all again on the biggest stage of all against the Tigers on Saturday at the Gabba. We'll talk about it after this with Jimmy Bartel on The Breakfast Club.
Victoria's own Breakfast Club.
I was fortunate to spend time at Hawthorn. They won a flag in 2008. The next year they didn't make the finals. The next year they got knocked out in the first week of the finals. The next year they got beaten in the prelim. The next year they got beaten in the grand final. And then they won three in a row. So it's a process that you have to go through, unfortunately. I was hoping that we wouldn't have to, but we met a team tonight who's lost a lot of preliminary finals, and they desperately wanted to get into a grand final, and they showed that in the way that they played tonight, and all credit to them. I thought that was a brilliant performance by Geelong.
Tough to argue with that. Chris Fagan, coach of the Lions, bowing to their opponents on the weekend, Saturday night at the Gabba. The Cats, too good. 40 points in the end of the margin, and it was about right, reflective of a dominant performance by the boys in the navy and white hoops. Jim, Brisbane never really, after that first quarter when Geelong didn't take their opportunities, never really looked like it. The Cats continued their demolition run through the finals campaign. Outside of that first week against Port Adelaide where they played okay, just missed their chances, have been really emphatic with the way they've gone about it.
Yeah, they've got depth and they've got experience, and there is a point of difference to this Cat side from recent years is that they've got ability to change matchups within games when things aren't going their way. And their back six, look, you're going, just speaking about the Brisbane game, if Charlie Cameron or Eric were to get off the chain, which Charlie Cameron kicked too early and they back collar Jasny in and probably won that battle in the end, but they've got the options. So if Cameron gets away from Collar Jasny, you can go, do we try Stewart? Do we try Henry? Do we go O'Connor? If Eric, you know, kicks a couple, they can do the same. They can go, well, Henderson's there. Do we even move the bigger Harry Taylor if he plays deep? Even Stewart again can go across, or O'Connor again. They can do that. And then forward of the ball, it's a little bit undersold that their power of the forward line. The little baldy man we know is a superstar, but you still have to put a lot of time into Myers because he can find space inside forward 50. You know what I mean? So they've got different matchups and things like that, which eventually, unless a big group was down like against Port Adelaide, they still nearly won the game. They're very tough to match up on the Cats. Like they had six or seven down against Port Adelaide, nearly won.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I think that we admire about Geelong and Richmond. Their evenness. While they've got stars, their evenness across the field is one of their great strengths. You go through just purely a very simple and raw statistic that I saw on the weekend. The 17 players for the Cats, Jim, had between 10 and 20 possessions. 17 out of the 22. Geelong, Brisbane had 10.
Yeah, what the point of difference they've been made, and you speak to Cats players and they say, oh, we haven't been focusing on it too much, but then you hear their backline coach, Matt Scarlett, in pre-game interviews just say what the players are either not listening or the coaches have done a good job. They've instilled it in them without them realising is their ball movement speed from their back half has gotten quicker. Now, whether the opposition's allowing them free players or not, they're still moving the ball quicker. What they're doing is... I think the Gabba has helped them a lot because you can get really wide. You can stretch the ground really wide in the Gabba. And if you watch down the ground for the Cats, is they're so well disciplined. And I spoke about this with Richmond the same. As soon as they turn the footy over, they get really wide and they force the opposition to go with them. If you go with them, they just ping you up through the middle because they catch the one or two out who are asleep. Normally it's a ruckman or someone like that, up through the middle. And you can play really dangerous football up through the middle of the Gabba. If you block up the middle, the Cats are happy to take the ball wide and forward, and they just get into dangerous territory anyway. So, but they're doing it quicker. So if you want a visual of it, if it's Stewart or Blitzarves who intercept the footy across half back, they're making that decision quicker. They're not going all the way back behind their mark, waiting. Oh, we can only kick down the line. They're going back, going almost 1, 2, 3. There's the free, just take it. There's the free, just take it.
I want to talk more about Geelong because they're still alive. But from a Brisbane perspective, I'm interested, guys, because it just struck me that Port Adelaide, as you were talking about before, they're one kick away from a grand final. They might not need to necessarily do too much to be thereabouts again next year. Was Brisbane exposed? Because a lot of the problems we had during the year about their inability to kick the goals when they need to, they just looked a lot short of Geelong. But then they did beat Richmond a couple of weeks ago. Do we worry? Not worry, but have Brisbane got a lot of work to do to take the next step?
I think they need another midfielder to really help Lockie. I think Jared Berry is going to be a very good midfielder. There's no doubt about it. McCluggage on a wing's really good, but I think they need another one. They need another really good mid to help Lockie Neal. Now, whether that's a lot of people go, oh, you need a taller midfielder. You just need a good one. Just get a good midfielder into that mix that you know can consistently win the football, that can consistently play well in those big games. Now, and now the forward piece is the other one that I've always felt that we've spoken about. You know, Hipwood and McStay are good players, but they weren't threatening on Saturday night really at all. The only threat was Charlie Cameron, and once Colin Jasny got control of that matchup, it didn't really look like the Lions had other avenues to score. Lockie Neal was the one that kicked a couple of goals. So he's having to do it in the midfield and then try kick goals as well to keep pace on the score. But their defence is solid. Darcy Gardner was a huge loss pre-match because just from a matchup point of view, he was able to play on Dangerfield. He could have played on Hawkins if needed. He could have played on Rowan if needed. So he could have even went to Gary Ablett if needed. So I think it's another mid and then the forward, obviously, in Joe Danaher.
Yeah, and if you're building the wish list out, the other thing I'd like to see, and it almost sounds like they've missed the eight, but they need to just do what they do well and improve on top of it. But if they're building the wish list, I'd like to see from Brisbane if Alex Witherden try and win his spot back, because I felt like they got bogged down across half-back. Now, I know how Daniel Rich is a powerful kicking player, but Witherden or that attacking half-back who breaks the line first by moving forward, it helps them get out a bit of that rut and then actually kick-starts where they look most dangerous. Brisbane only looked dangerous against the Cats when the game was in high tempo. high speed, you know, going forward really fast. And if you've got one of those players across half back who can generate speed naturally, by as soon as they get the ball, they go forward by kicking or running or just creating something. And do you maybe, I know they got Marcus Adams in to help, and I thought Jackson Payne was fantastic for the late call-up. Yeah. Maybe he might be the one they already have on their list. So they might already have it internally, but develop another player who can intercept the footy. And we know how important intercepting the footy is. Richmond have done it for years. Geelong have done it for years. West Coast, Collingwood, who have got a very good defence, they intercept the footy. Problem is, Harris Andrews is their best key defender, but he's probably their best intercept as well. Now, Saturday night, he's got his hands full, obviously taking care of big Tim Tam Tom. Now, if you've got another one, at least then, if you think Andrews is the matchup, the other one can come over and help out. You can generate attack. You can stop the opposition. So I just feel they're one intercept style player. Now, they might already have it with Payne and Adams, or do you go look for one?
I'm key forwards critical and another good solid mid. I reckon that'll get things going their way pretty quickly.
Tip them over.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe's going to help their accuracy in front of goal, though.
It should be like a driving range. Beginner's night at the driving range. Bing, bing.
Just get him on the park.
He's a massive presence. He's a massive presence. So,
of course, he'll make a huge difference to them. But
like, the chain.
Joe, change their goal.
He's going to have five shots on goal most games. Now, where those five shots on goal go is a different conversation. But you can almost pencil him in for that many.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We'll get to a break. We've got a grand final in our midst, Richmond and Geelong. We'll have a bit of a preview of that and talk about a few other topics with Jim as well. On a Monday morning, it's grand final week on The Breakfast Club. Great to have Jimmy Bartel a part of the team in 2020.
You know, it's a sad day. Like, Reece is obviously a person that we know and we cherish, and he's an incredible, incredible person. The rigours of our game, especially in this year, it probably reciprocates what people are going through. It's tough, it's challenging, and you know, we just wish him a speedy recovery. Yeah, and the North Melbourne Football Club as well. Like, as people like Reece Shaw don't grow on trees. He's a special human. He's got an incredible relationship with his players, and we just wish he bounces back very quickly. Because people like him are great to have in the industry.
Damien Hardwick speaking about Reece Shaw from the Kangaroos across the weekend. Of course, he's getting ready for another grand final against the Cats this time around at the Gabba on Saturday. Great to have Jimmy Bartel a part of our team here on The Breakfast Club, wrapping up all the weekend's footy action every week through the home and away season and the finals as well. And before we get to the grand final sort of leanings, early doors, Jim, I know there's a bit to unfold before that. We got a statement from the Kangaroos on Friday, I think it might have been, around about 5 p.m. A host of things from Chairman Ben Buckley. But one of the key headlines, of course, was that new coach Reece Shaw was taking some time out for some personal leave. It's been very well received in terms of the empathy shown from the competition, particularly from the coaches, like you heard from Damien Hardwick there, on on the challenges that they all faced through that role, particularly through a year like this.
Yeah, Damien Hardwick, what a class act. He probably couldn't have said it any better. And take all the time you need, Reece, because if and when he wants to come back to footy, there is definitely a spot for him, because he's incredibly talented. You just don't end up being an AFL senior coach after such a short amount of time in your coaching career to lead an AFL club. Like, that just points to the amount of coaching ability, but also, as Damien talked on, his ability to connect with people and players within a footy club is extraordinary. Like, you have to have some serious talent, what they call emotional intelligence, to be able to connect with 40 players and your football department in such a quick time to become a senior coach at AFL level. He's an extraordinary good person and a great footy talent. So take your time, and when you're ready, the footy world will be better for it, having you back around in the system.
Yeah, the footy world, no doubt, with giving all their best to Reece throughout this period. Sorry, Rama, jump in.
Well, I think it goes back to the point that we spoke about at the beginning of this hour, just around hub life and the difficulties of it all. You know, a first-year coach into that environment every single day, you know, 24/7 environment. It was tough. It was really, really tough, but we've got some great programs in place for our players. We need to continue to put these great programs in place for our coaches as well, because they're susceptible to it.
I think one of the things about, I reckon, the perception of the hubs is that people see everyone up in beautiful weather, around a pool, or having fun playing games in the hotel rooms and all that sort of thing, playing golf and then being with your mates. But what people fail to realise is the lack of balance in that life for the last 100 days, that it's all been football, football, football. That when you are in your home environment, part of the guy, and guys, we've all played at the highest level, is that you have that ability to be able to have your people outside of football to help balance you as a person. So when it's all football, that can become incredibly intense, particularly if things aren't going well.
I love you guys, but imagine seeing each other for 24/7, all day, every day.
I don't think anyone wants that, Rammer.
Well, in a way, like, if you think about that, and our listeners, you think about being at work 24/7, and you've got to be on the whole time. So, you know, you might just be going down to lunch, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're into a work conversation again when it's meant to be your day off. So, you know, some clubs did it extremely well in the hub. Some clubs, I think, if they had their time again, would look to do things differently.
It does leave them, if we take it from a purely football perspective, how vulnerable does it leave the Kangaroos at the moment, leading into a trade period, a draft, Rammer, a figurehead for the football team, I suppose?
Well, all their other pieces are in place. I think last year they weren't, and we saw on a number of occasions that spokesperson was Reece Shaw. Through trade period last year, Reece was talking. He was the one up front. He was talking about the club. We saw on the couple of draft nights, you know, he's in there. He's front and centre in there. So they've got all those other pieces in place. Brady Rawlings, their GM of footy. Glenn Luff, a friend of ours, who's their list manager. And then Scotty Clayton's their head of player personnel. So those pieces are in place to be able to trade and make decisions on lists. But, yeah, your coach is an important one, because talking to players now when you've had the year that they've had, Jim, is really important to make sure they're in the right mindset to come back to a pre-season.
Yeah, and the issue as well, and it's not unique to North Melbourne, but it gets compounded, I think, at clubs like North Melbourne or down the bottom of the list or trying to do a rebuild, is the 37% cut to your football department. Now's the time that you actually want to be investing in your football department. You know, when you've turned over a quarter of the list, you've got a young senior coach in Reece Shaw and a young coaching department, you actually need to sort of spend more to get better, because you want greater talent, you want to attract good talent to surround Reece Shaw and the developing young list now that they're going down that path. So you want to go get the best development coach, you want to bring in, you know, senior experienced coaches to surround the younger coaching panel. Yeah, you might want to be able to do extra things around strength and conditioning to fast track the young players, but you can't because there's no money. They've absolutely cut the knees off at the footy department spend.
It's a challenge for all of them, but certainly down the bottom of the table at the moment. So it's a bigger mountain to climb than others, perhaps. Just leading into the grand final, Jim, you've got a leaning. Do you think the Cats are the control will have it over the chaos? Or do you think the chaos and the experience of Richmond of recent years puts them in a better position?
Oh, I'm a massive admirer of the Tigers, and it's so difficult not to tip them, but I'm a man of my tip, and I did tip the Cats going back probably 6 or 7 weeks ago as my flag premiership favourite, so I've got to stick fat to it. I've got to die on that hill as the Cats flag.
One of the narratives this week will be the fact that Richmond has got an exceptional record over Geelong in recent times. I think it's 5 of the last 6 times Richmond has beaten Geelong. And then obviously we saw what happened when they last met. Richmond completely dominated. How relevant do you think that is on Saturday?
It's really relevant because, as Half keeps touching on, and it's the game style that actually affects what the Cats do. We know the Cats like structure, and keep using that word that Half points to, control. And what Richmond does in a game is take all the control out of it. So it's almost like their chaos has control, has system and method to it, but it completely affects sides that like to be structured behind the ball, like to be structured at contests. They're willing to to throw all that out by forward handball, by playing on quick, by bringing the ball to the ground. We've seen Jack Riewoldt fly for marks with one hand just to bring the ball to the ground because that's what benefits them the most. So it is clearly a style that troubles the Cats.
Ramo, you said early doors, bit to play out clearly, and who knows what happens from a selection perspective, but sure. You wouldn't imagine too many changes.
I'm not sure I'm willing to disclose this before Friday.
Just a leaning. Just give us a leaning.
I think my leaning's Geelong at the moment. I think my leaning's Geelong at the minute. And I say that because there's parts of Geelong's game that you absolutely need to shut down. And Richmond aren't a tagging team. But you look at that record. Richmond have clearly got a system that they know works against Geelong. You know, 5 of the last 6. So clearly there's something that Richmond have identified that they go, we go after this. Now, I think personally, that is where Geelong turned the ball over when they play against Richmond. A lot of the time, Geelong turned the ball over at half forward. Okay, that then allows Richmond that chaos going forward. So, you know, you see a lot. You see Edwards and Hawley and Baker and Short just, you know, on the end of handballs, that forward handball that Jim talks about. Geelong need to get the ball in deeper. If they can get the ball deeper against the Tigers and make them defend deep, that's where I think they're their best opportunities at the moment.
All right, the forecast is 19 with a top of 29. 29 is the top, I think, for Saturday. Played at night, cloudy, medium chance of showers, 40% chance. Chance of a thunderstorm, light winds for Saturday night. So a chance of a thunderstorm, 40% chance of showers. Does that change your inklings?
Well, it does. I think it does for Whitey because I know how much he's looking forward to the entertainment. Does that change? Does that change what you think, Whitey?
Well, they may need some cover. They may need a tarpaulin of some description. So that's going to make a
big blue
that's
one?
Really going to affect the build up.
Very good, Rama. Very good indeed. Hey, Jim. We look forward to summing it all up with you next Monday on the program. Thank you for your company this week. We look forward to doing it next week.
Appreciate it. It was good fun.
Always. Jimmy Bartel. Brownlow medalist, did you know? 29 votes.